like, oh, listen, would you like to play Augusta with me? And I thought about retiring on the spot. Got a text message a couple of years ago and I thought someone was winding me up.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Daily.
Hello and welcome to Off the Ball. Kathleen McNamee here, and I am delighted to say that I am joined by the author of Headshot, Rita Bullwinkle. This book, Rita, is absolutely sensational, I have to say. I think it's one of the best books I've read this year, if not in the past couple of years. It truly, as a woman working in sport, it is brilliant to read a book about girls just engrossed in their sport, and that is absolutely nothing else. For anyone who hasn't managed to catch the book yet, it follows eight of the best teenage girl boxers in the US who were facing off against each other in the 12th annual Daughters of America tournament. It's set in Bob's Boxing Palace in Reno, Nevada, and the whole fictional tale following these women is absolutely incredible. Rita, just to get a little bit of background to yourself, where did you come up with the idea of taking a story and pitching it in different matches, going inside the heads of every single individual character in such an intricate way that you also pull in the sport at the same time? It's incredibly done.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, Kathy, thank you so much for saying that. It means so much to me, especially coming from you, someone who's seeped and living and swimming in the world. Yeah, you know, I was a competitive youth athlete, although I wasn't a boxer. I'm not a boxer. I was a top 20 ranked Division One co-captain of a Division One water polo team. And I competed in 8 Junior Olympics. And I competed in a lot of other sports as well, but that was the one that I was most successful at. And through these memories of being a young person and a young woman and competing in youth women's athletic tournaments, I had this really intense trove of memories of driving to all these different parts of the country for a weekend, always to like be in this same kind of architectural space, sports facilities here in the US. I don't know what they're like in Ireland, but sports facilities here in the US, they're kind of like malls or airports or convention centers. It doesn't really matter what part of the country you're in. They all have the same materials and the lighting's the same and they all feel the same. And so I spent so much of my youth driving to these like architectural islands to be in the same architectural space and oftentimes to compete against the same young women again and again. And it was a really intense, compulsive act. And I had all of these memories of how deeply important it was to me and how I had built kind of my whole life around it. And I wanted to see if I could remember that feeling. And I also was curious about why I did it. And I still don't think I know, but I think that's part of why I needed to write the book.
It's amazing that you say that because I never competed anywhere close to the level that you did, but I did play Gaelic football here in Ireland, which is a very popular sport for people to play. And when you talk about that driving to random places in the country and everywhere kind of feels the same, I played basketball too. And when I was reading your description of Bob's Boxing Palace, I could almost see in my head all the old halls I used to play in, the rickety steps up to some viewing platform, the plank on the ground that you always knew was going to crack a little bit under your foot.
Yeah.
That sense of atmosphere and place, even though we're talking from two totally different spots, is really, really prominent in the book.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you felt that way. Oh no, my daughter has escaped. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry at all. We love a surprise guest on the show.
She wishes. No, it's 8 a.m. I am born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area in California. And so it's 8 a.m. where I am, which is just a hair before school. I mean, the space of the tournament, it's architecturally kind of interesting. It's almost like a spaceship. And then the feeling of it, it's like when you're competing in a tournament, it's like the whole rest of the world has to fall away. It's a really claustrophobic kind of pressure cooked space. Yeah, and as I think you mentioned, the book takes place just over the 2 days of a tournament, with eight matches, seven matches, sorry, seven matches between eight young women.
And for those young women, their characters are so visceral and they jump off the page at you. But I love the differences between them all as well. You have the likes of Rachel Darko with the raccoon hat, and I love the image of her with the tail in her mouth, and you can see it so clearly in your head. But then she's up against Kate Heffer, who is like specifically plans, projects. Did you specifically put characters like that together that are almost so opposite in what they are thinking in that moment, but at the same time are brought together by the sport and the different things that are going on in their lives that that makes them find themselves in the same room loving the same sport?
Hallie, I'm so glad you asked that. I mean, I don't know if it was very, I don't know if it was super conscious, if that makes sense. Rachel DiRico seems like a particularly good person. She's to deploy on Kate Heffer. Rachel is kind of a someone who believes that it's there's power in making yourself not making yourself confusing to people. That by wearing like weird outfits and being loud and saying things that don't make sense, saying things that sound a little crazy, that that's a way to, because people don't know what she's going to do, to gain power in a situation. And Kate Heffer is a pretty classic type A, someone who needs to be able to control a situation, to know exactly what's happening, to know that she's in power. Yeah, I don't know if I thought about it that consciously about putting such opposites against each other. And I think there's this feeling as the book goes on, I don't know if this resonates with you, but of the girls melding into each other a little bit. There's a section in the book where it talks about when it moves on to the second day of the match and the second round, that the girls who won the day before like carry the bodies or have somehow like cannibalized the bodies of the girls they've beaten. So there is this sense a little bit in the second half of the book of the girls almost like melting into each other a little bit and becoming more comrades than adversaries. I mean, the other thing that's interesting about your notion that there are like two people that are perfectly pitted against each other is that since I've written the book, I've kind of realized that all eight of the protagonists, all eight of the young women are all these, they're all like part me and part not me. It's a, so maybe it was like unconsciously trying to find these two like opposing aspects of myself, both of which I've embodied. Okay, so the other way I was thinking about it is, have you ever seen one of those experimental Shakespeare plays where all the characters are played by the same person?
I have.
That's kind of what I felt like writing these young women. Like I was an actor playing each of them, but I had to like give each of them part of myself. I don't know if that makes sense, but
No,
that's.
it makes perfect sense. And there's actually so much in that that I'm curious about because when I was reading the book, it felt like reading a play or a theater script almost in the way the characters were interacting with each other. And I know it's something that people throw around about boxing quite a bit, about, the boxing ring being a theater set and the theater that happens in it. But I was also going to ask you, when you talk about all the characters having a little piece of yourself, because Anna Burns, who wrote the Booker-winning book, Milkman, she always talks about how she can't write a book until the characters come to her. And I've spoken to her about it before, and she would say, it's not that they appear in my mind. It's like they literally come to me in my dreams, in my day to day. They just keep appearing and they're calling on me to write it. And when I was reading your characters, there was such a clarity in each of them that it reminded me of the way she talked about it.
Well, that's a very great compliment. I'll take it. Yeah, I mean, that really, oh my gosh, I love her writing so much. And that really resonates with me and my experience with writing characters, that they kind of appear. I mean, it's not, of course, it's not, out of thin air. It's out of whatever soup is going on in my head. But yeah, they do just kind of say, I'm here now. Let me know what you want me to do.
Well, I mean, I think you've got some pretty good characters out of that method. So any other projects that are coming up is in safe hands. You said that you competed in loads of different sports, water polo mainly, I think you said a bit of basketball as well, and running too, did you mention? And yes. I'm just curious as to what it was about boxing in particular that drew you to it and how you managed to get the rhythm of boxing so well, because what's going on in the girls' heads is so well represented in the punches that they are putting in on their opposition.
Oh, well, I'm happy to hear that. Yeah, I mean, so much about the sport of boxing is so theatrical. The way the ring itself often looks and feels like a stage in the audience, like the audience of a play. The lighting feels so theatrical. I also, something I'm just captivated by with the sport and why I knew it was like the sport itself, like the essence of it inside of a boxing match felt like it could be a novel, was because when two boxers are boxing against each other, there's such a deep dialogue of people, you know, people call it choreography. In literary history, I'm certainly not alone in being an author that's been narratively captivated by the sport. And, you know, I kind of arrived at a point. I had an old draft book that was more traditionally structured, that was written from the first person point of view of one boxer. And when I read that draft, it wasn't a draft. It wasn't really this book. It was something else entirely. I realized that the only energy in the book, the only thing I was interested in, was when two young women were in the ring and not speaking to one another, were really just fighting each other. And it was then that I knew that would be like the entirety of being in the match would be the whole book. And then that's what I wanted the whole book to be. And it means so much to me that you find some authenticity in the book, in the world of boxing. I really learned everything that I know about boxing from watching this trove of training YouTube videos of young women who were recording videos of themselves to archive and catalog the changing of their form over time, which is a really common training technique. It was one that, although I wasn't a boxer, for all of the other sports I played, I used a lot. It's very common. I remember taking, you know, probably thousands of hours of footage of myself shooting free throws and watching it again and again and again. And it was the repetitiveness of these long, unedited form videos where young women were trying to see the difference between what they were doing in their mind and what they were actually doing with their body, that I felt like I could know about the sport, that I did know about the sport. And I felt like I had access to it. I did have some actual boxers read the book early on, which was really fun. There's a writer, a brilliant writer in the US, Laura Vandenberg, who is both an amazing writer and also a very accomplished boxer. And she gave it a read and said some nice things about it. And then I got really lucky. My husband's cousin was maybe in a book club. My husband's cousin's wife is friends with the cousin of Ginny Fuchs, who's one of the best boxers in the world.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's, you know, I mean, you know, you're coming in from Ireland. I mean, you guys have Katie Taylor. I mean, you've got the goods, but Ginny Fuchs is also really, really amazing. And I don't know if they fought against each other before, but anyway, so it was kind of a pipe dream to see if I could get a book in Ginny's hands. And I could, you know, much, much thanks to my husband's cousin, Ann Phillips, that did happen. And she gave the book an early read, and that was really meaningful to just and to talk with her about it and make sure I shot in the right direction.
Well, as someone reading it from the outside and has also never competed in a boxing match, but has watched quite a few of them, I felt the pacing of it was very accurate. And I liked that fact that the literary element wasn't let down by the sporting element. I think that's something that's quite difficult to do in a sports book, is making sure that the writing lives up to the sport or the sport lives up to the writing. And it's really hard to combine those two things. And something that I've noticed, particularly over the last 6 months, when it comes to writing about women and women in sport, is we're moving into a space where these sportswomen are given agency to their stories. And it's not about a man or a coach or the struggles that someone had to get over because they were a woman. And it's so refreshing. Right. The first book I read was a book by an Irish author called Emma Ryan, and she wrote a book called The Grass Ceiling. And it's about her life in Gaelic football, Gaelic games, camogie, all that side of things. And the majority of the book, the biography, is just her talking about how hard it was to train, how hard it was to leave her club to go to the States for a summer, the injuries that she suffered. There was a few things in there about the specific difficulties of being a woman in a very much a man's world. And I remember putting that book down and wanting to cry because it was the first time I'd read that. And then I read Kick the Latch by Catherine Scanlon, and I got that same feeling again. And then I read your book, and I was like, this is just their story, and it's about sport, and it's about their lives. And finally, these girls are getting the agency to tell their sporting stories, and it's so refreshing.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, I'm so so moved that it elicited that feeling and elicited that company. Kick the Latch by Catherine Scanlon is absolutely radiant. The other titles, embarrassingly, I haven't read, but now they're on my list. I really was not, I was like deeply, deeply uninterested, and the book really does not pay any time to the coaches or the parents. They exist, but I thought of them as kind of like, they're so peripheral, they're with their faces blurred out. Like, the real drama of the book and the real intensity, my hope, comes from the dynamics between these young women. I don't know what it is about the culture that is just, with women's athletics in particular, I wish I could say we're fully out of it, but I think we have a little bit of time. That is just obsessed with the diamond in the rough narrative, specifically with women's athletics. This idea that like a young female athlete needs to be like discovered or supported by like a male coach or parent.
She doesn't believe in herself. She is full of self-doubt. Parents don't think she should play sport. Teachers doesn't think she should play sport because sport isn't for girls. And then all of a sudden, this really forward-thinking man comes along and is like, no, you can play sport.
It's such a disaster. I have to laugh, you know, as a coping mechanism, I have to laugh about it. I think I was 12 when Bendit, I mean, if we can rag on it for just a little bit, I think I was 12 when Bendit like Beckham came out, and I was like the producers that made that movie, I was the market they were envisioning, you know. I was like a 12 year old tomboy, like playing soccer. I was like, this movie, somebody take me to see it in the movie theaters. And I remember watching that movie, and I didn't really have the language for it at the time, but the plot of that movie is so, can I swear on this podcast? It's really, whatever. It's really fun.
Go for it. I'm getting the thumbs up from our producer, so go for it.
It's like really fucked up. I mean, because first of all, you have Keira Knightley as like an athlete. You know, it's very bizarre. The casting is very bizarre. And then The plot is like the male coach teaches them how to play soccer or football, you know, and then he shtups one of them. Like, that's the end. Is he like He fucks one of them. I remember being like, I don't know if this was how this was supposed to go. Like, and then even like this year, you know, obviously I don't even remember what it's called. Is it called The King, the Will Smith movie? Where okay. where it's like people can't really fathom that Serena and Venus are geniuses, like because of themselves. So they have to make a whole movie about how their dad is like really behind their successes. I mean, it's pretty comedic. It's such a bummer. Yeah. So the coaches, they're not in the book. They're not in the book.
They've been shoved to the side. They're not the most important people. But no, it is such a narrative in sport in general. And it's probably owing to the fact as well that we just don't really have a lot of female coaches in a lot of sports too. So
yeah, so few. I mean, I had maybe one, but she wasn't even really there. Yeah. Mm.
I was so fortunate growing up in that when I was playing Gaelic football, I pretty much only had female coaches until I was about 16, so like 8 years maybe. And I just assumed that was the norm. I didn't think there was anything different to it. And I still think back on those coaches now, and they taught me so much, especially for a girl of that age, and you're going through a lot of different changes and hormones are all over the place. And I was never particularly good at sport, but they always knew how to handle it. And it's always something that has stuck with me, particularly with coaching and how you talk to young female athletes, how much that is such a crucial time to keep encouraging girls to stay in sport. And that's why I love reading books like this, because the sport is the story. And yes, they have other stuff going on in their lives. And yes, okay, maybe some of the stuff isn't normal day-to-day things, but a lot of it is far more relatable than the experience of saying, well, nah, you're a girl, you can't play sport.
Yeah. Oh my, well, that's amazing. I'm jealous.
Well, hopefully your daughter, if she decides to go into sport, that experience will be different for her because we're slowly making progress day to day. Will we be getting another sports book out of you, Rita? Do you feel like this is something that you would be interested in? I know you said before that you don't see yourself as a sports writer, but just someone who has written a book about sport.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good question. I don't know. I just finished a story about swimming. I think there's something really interesting that happens when we use our body for sport in a way that it reminds me of writing. Like you have to leave, if you're really in it, you have to leave your body in some way. And I think that interests me in it greatly. And there's so many narratives, like we were talking about, like Kick the Latch by Catherine Scanlon, another book that just happens to be about horse racing that I really love is The Lord of Misrule by Jamie Gordon. There's so many texts, I could go on and on about sport, that move me in such incredible ways. The way Natalie Diaz writes about basketball.
You may just have to send me a list on email after we get off this call.
But I think like the novel project I'm in now isn't, I can say it's not in the world of sport, but that doesn't, you know, maybe I'll return later. But I felt like I spent so much time in that world that now I'm like, you know, I'm taking a vacation somewhere else. But life is long.
Well, exactly. It's still plenty of time to write lots more books. And I hope you do continue to write in the world of sport. As much as I will be picking up everything else that you do as well. But in particular, I think you write about it very well. That book I mentioned earlier, The Grass Ceiling by Emma Ryan, she had a great line in it, which says, "You get to think about your body in terms of what it can do rather than how it looks. You become more engine than ornament. Camogie is the only context in which I have ever been praised for aggression. It teaches you to be commanding, to take your ground, to assert rather than mitigate your physical presence." And I think that really comes through in the characters that you write as well, in that this is somewhere that these girls feel like they can be commanding and aggressive compared to anywhere else in their lives.
Oh my gosh. Well, that is that quote. Oh my God. It's like, it's white hot.
We love amazing. A little bit of white hot lines around here.
Yeah. I in my wildest dreams, that's what I would have hoped the book would have elicited. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, Rita, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Very much looking forward to seeing what else you write. And thank you for writing one of my favorite books so far of the year.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for reading. Thank you for reading it with such generosity and insight and grace, and for being so much fun to talk to.
I feel like we may just have to start up a little, you know, pen pal situation here where we swap pieces of good writing, and I'll share them on Off the Ball Breakfast to anyone who listens regularly so that everyone can join in on the ride.
Love that. I'm in.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.